Welcome to Cashflow Positive. I'm your host, Kenny Bedwell, founder of SCR Insights, one of the leading data platforms in the industry. Through using data and analytics, I've been able to replace my W-2 with cash flow from my successful short-term rentals. And my goal is to help you achieve the same freedom and success. Whether you're a seasoned investor or just a novice looking to make your mark, Cashflow Positive is your go-to resource for unlocking the full potential of your property portfolio. Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of Cashflow Positive. I'm your host, Kenny Bedwell, and we're going to be talking about creative financing SCRs, okay, and what that means. So we're going to dive into what types of creative financing there are, and we're going to go into also the different types of strategies that you can apply. And then we're also going to talk about how does it work specifically for short-term rentals, and then give some warnings at the end there and wrap up the episode. Okay, so first, I want to dive straight into it because this is a heavy, heavy topic that a lot of people get excited about because it's this idea, creative financing is this idea of basically not going through the traditional routes of financing a property. So what I mean by that is creative financing or creatively financing a short-term rental, not through a traditional bank. And that's, people get excited about that because short-term rentals, not just short-term rentals, but properties in general, require a lot of documentation and tax returns and all kinds of information the bank wants from you. And it can be a stressful situation. And also, you might not fit in their nice, you know, square round or, you know, square box that they want you to be in that allows you to buy a short-term rental property, which can limit your scalability. Banks want to see a certain number of debt to income ratio, or they want a certain amount of experience because based on your situation, you might be considered risky. And so creative financing allows you to kind of circumvent that and work directly with the seller and create your own terms that obviously the seller agrees to, or maybe the seller sets some terms that you agree to that don't require all the paperwork and, you know, officialness of a typical bank loan. Now, creative financing, a lot of people, they learn of different types of creative financing, which we're going to talk about in a second, and they assume that that's the only way to do creative financing, okay? But the reality is creative financing isn't simply just not using a type of bank or avoiding a bank in terms of acquiring a property. There could be other ways to creative finance a deal. And in fact, where I'm getting with that is, if you haven't told, is it's kind of an arbitrary and vague term, right? It doesn't necessarily mean one particular strategy or way to get the deal done. It's just something that people say that was different than maybe a traditional process. But if you're not doing traditional processes, then is it creative to you if you learn of another way to do it? Maybe it's unique and something new. But the reality is creative financing for most people in their heads is just not using a bank. And that could or could not be true, actually. We see creative financing deals that involve a bank, and that's totally fine. And that's kind of what I want to talk about. So number one, creative financing is a vague and arbitrary term, meaning that how you define it is how you define it, okay? And it's not wrong or necessarily like all-encompassing, right? So just don't limit your mindset to, well, I heard some guru say that creative financing is X, Y, and Z. Well, that's one way to do it, but there's all a bunch of different ways to do it as well. They just don't like talking about all the different ways. Okay, so now let's move to like who does creative financing. So creative financing is really where you're working, you're working on setting the terms with yourself and the seller, okay? Now, a bank could be involved, all right? Depends on how the situation is. And also, there could be attorneys and other parties involved too, somebody to arbitrate, you know, the deal too. So it really just depends on the situation. But the nice part about when I think of creative financing and how I define it is that it's really an interaction that the buyer and the seller agree to, okay? Or not an interaction, terms that the buyer and the seller agree to that might not necessarily be as traditional as what the bank wants the buyer to do. So when you think about it, the reason why creative financing sounds so attractive is because, once again, going back to the non-traditional side of it, is the bank puts buyers in these specific boxes, not just with the document stuff like we talked about, but certain requirements for the buyer to actually acquire the property. For example, a property has to appraise, meaning that in order for the bank to lend on it, they need to know if, you know, hey, if this buyer defaults, I need to get my, try to get my money back, and I'm going to foreclose on that property and take ownership of that property. And I need to know what that property is truly worth. Therefore, we require an appraisal, right? And so the bank is going to go and get an appraisal, and the seller's price has to be there if, you know, the seller or the buyer wants to not have to come out of pocket for additional amount, so that the bank is only lending off the appraised value. With creative financing, you don't need an appraisal. It doesn't matter, right? So, but keep in mind too, once again, I'm kind of vaguely defining it and keeping it pretty broad. But the reality is, you're not limited, what I'm getting at, you're not limited by maybe some of the bank restrictions that are out there, okay? So it's an attractive way to get into a deal without being, you know, pigeonholed or handcuffed by a bank and some of their restrictions. Okay. But keep in mind that bank restrictions are there to evaluate risk. Okay. And if you're buying properties using creative financing that are overvalued according to, you know, the seller, but you're just trying to get the deal done for a number of reasons, you're actually not making a wise real estate investment decision. Okay. Now, I'm not saying that creative financing isn't wise real estate investing decision. Not saying that at all. I'm just saying, if you're just going around buying properties based on whatever seller thinks their property is worth, you're probably overpaying for it, right? So think about it like that. So be, you know, as you're getting creative with it, understand that, hey, you know, some of the typical protections that banks put around this, there's not going to be in that, which is beneficial, but also risky, right? That adds a little bit of risk into the deal. So whatever. Now, as a seller, it's great. But as a buyer, you know, buyer beware. Okay. So let's talk about different creative financing techniques that are out there, okay? And a lot of them tie in together. You're going to hear different terms, and they're actually the same exact thing. It's just how some guru puts their spin on it and puts a nice cute name on it and calls it whatever. But there's a couple that work. And there's really, you can, like I said, there's multiple ways to do this. There's 1,000 ways to skin the cat. And, you know, there's like versions of the same techniques and things like that. But let's talk about the major ones that are out there. So the first one that we hear a ton about in the short-term rental space is called subject to or sub to. Okay. So subject to is basically, and man, I could do a whole episode on just what subject to is, but I'm going to do my best to describe it in like a minute because I want to talk about the other techniques. But subject to is basically the seller is assigning, okay, the new buyer or the buyer, the mortgage, their mortgage. So recently in 2020 to 2020, you know, the end of 2021 into 2022, interest rates were really low. And so a lot of people, that means money was cheap because you could get money for, you know, 3%, 2%, 2.5% or something like that on their mortgages. Okay. Well, you have a lot of people who bought really high in 2020 and 2021. But have low interest rate mortgages, so they can't sell their property at, you know, if they're trying to sell their property today, even 3 years later, they can't really sell their property. It hasn't appreciated that much, right? Maybe they bought it at the height of all the appreciation, and right now there isn't a lot of equity in the property. And so they're going to lose money when they sell the property, okay, which they can't do. So because they got to pay, when you think about it, when I say lose money, they might sell it at the same price, but then they got to pay realtor commissions, and then they got to pay other fees and other things, closing costs, which for a seller could be 7 to 10% of the purchase price. Okay. So the reality is, if you don't have any equity in the house and you only did 3.5% down, 10% down even, which a lot of short-term rental hosts did, okay, or are doing, you don't have a lot of equity in the home. And if it didn't really appreciate, or even if it appreciated only $10,000 or $20,000, you don't have a lot. And so selling a house could actually like cost you money, which really sucks. So with subject two, what the seller is doing is saying, look, I don't want to lose money on this on selling this house. And so I'm just going to assign, meaning in a loosey-goosey term to put it, is basically like trade. I'm basically going to say, hey, look, the buyer is going to take on the mortgage and they're going to agree to pay me over time, and they can set the own debt. The seller can set the down payment requirements or negotiate that with the buyer. They're going to pay me a certain down payment percentage, 5, 10, 15% or whatever. Usually it's around 10 to 15%. The buyer is responsible for that mortgage for, most people do 5 years. They call it a 5-year balloon. Okay. Meaning that they're going to take on the mortgage and start paying your mortgage payments for you. And it's attractive to the buyer. And this is why sub two is really popular, is because you get that low interest rate as the buyer. So with a property, especially in short-term rentals that don't maybe cash flow at a higher interest rate at the 7, 7.5%, you're now, if you sub two, they're going to have a lower interest rate. They're going to be, it could be in the fives, it could be in the fours, or even the threes, right? And so that can help your cash flow of the property and make a deal, even though the price point is pretty high. Now, in sub two, what I've seen some of the sellers do, because this is an attractive term and a lot of people, I don't have to go through a bank and maybe the down payment amount isn't as much. They're going 5% or maybe just 10%, no closing costs or anything else. Well, and it's already furnished and all this attractive stuff. But the problem with it is that sometimes the sellers will say, hey, look, you know, you bought this property for, I bought this property for $500,000, but I'm going to sell it to you based on what I think it's worth or what I think it will be worth in 5 years, where you can refinance out of, so I can get some sort of made up appreciation is what I call it. So in this case, they bought it for 500 and they're trying to sell it. And they might say, well, like, look, we'll do a creative financing deal, but you know, we'll do it for 600,000. So the seller just makes $100,000 getting it to you. And maybe they only require a down payment of say 10% on 600,000. So they pay you the seller $60,000. And then the seller is basically getting interest on the difference, and the mortgage is being paid for. And then after 5 years, they refinance and they get, you know, they're pushed out. And then now the buyer owns that house outright, because assuming in 5 years, it will be worth $600,000 or more, they can refinance that mortgage and get out. Or have it in a traditional bank instead of it, you know, ballooning with the interest payments. So some more stuff to dive in there. But basically what this allows people to do is, number one, if you don't have a lot of capital, go in and get properties without having to go through a bank. Okay. Number two, it doesn't go on your debt to income ratio because you didn't go through a bank. It doesn't go on your credit score because it didn't go through a bank or traditional lending. And number three, it allows you to get assuming whatever the seller's interest rate was, it's going to be a lower interest rate. And so you'll be able to take advantage of a lower interest rate. Now, the cons of it are, and this is what I typically see with sub two deals, it sounds really sexy and attractive, but the problem from the buyer's side is, will it actually cash flow even with a lower interest rate? We have to ask ourselves with short-term rentals, why is it being subject to'd, right? Why is this property, why can't the seller just STR the property and make money as it is? Why do they have to sell it to somebody else, especially if it's in a vacation rental market and there's no equity in it? Because they bought at the top of the market and it's probably not making any money as is. So unless you have some grandiose idea to improve the cash flow of that property, it's not going to make sense. And rarely do subject to properties in most markets for buyers make sense. But if you're a seller and you're listening to this, it could be a good opportunity, especially if you're trying to sell pretty quickly and you don't have a lot of equity in your property. Okay, so I'm not opposed to it, but rarely do I see the properties actually cash flow, even though they're sub two deal. But I see a lot of people really excited about sub two, doing backflips over it, especially like listening to Pace Morby and other people talk about it. The reality is they rarely make sense for short-term rentals because those properties don't cash flow as is. And you assuming it doesn't mean it's going to cash flow magically, right? Unless you're going to pump in a ton of money into that property. But why are you sub-2ing to begin with? Because you don't have a lot of money. So it's just counterintuitive. So don't rush into a sub-2 deal simply because you get a lower interest rate. Don't be distracted by interest rate. There are three things when we underwrite short-term rental properties that make up how well a property is going to perform. Your monthly mortgage payment, okay, which is why sub two is attractive. Second one are your monthly expenses. And the third one is your gross revenue, right? If the gross revenue isn't there, then the other two don't even matter, okay? Sure, you can try to limit your expenses, but the reality is if it doesn't make sense as is, It's not going to make sense, as is again in this just the hands of a different person. So always ask that question when you're looking at sub two deals. But I have seen that, have seen a few that do work out and can make sense. But the reality is most of them do not. So be careful with sub two. Okay, so we have sub two, the next one, which that one ate time. I figured it would. We'll go a little bit longer in this episode. The next one is actually going to be owner financing. Okay, so very similar to sub two, the owner is essentially acting as the bank to the buyer. So with owner financing, the owner, the seller says, "Hey, I'm going to set the terms, and I'm going to be the bank, and you're going to pay me a monthly mortgage payment based on what the property, what we agree to, what the property is worth." Okay. The once again, there's some similarities to sub two, and you're going to find a lot of creative financing techniques are all very similar, all have similar kind of things, where it's just the owner, the sellers, and the buyers working together to figure out things. But now the seller is the bank, but they're not requiring an appraisal. They're not requiring all these restrictions and stuff. They're just saying, "Hey, give me a down payment, and then you're going to pay me as if I was a bank." And there's an interest rate. It might be a lower interest rate, okay, that has also a balloon, meaning that it can increase in future years. So typically, I see in like 5 years, but you can set it to whatever the heck you want it to be. Okay, it doesn't matter if it's 5, 7, 10, 20, 30. 30 is pretty crazy for the seller. So I typically see 5 to 10. But the reality is what they're trying to do is say, look, you can come in at this deal at a low down payment amount. You don't have to go through a bank. I'm going to act as the bank. And basically, you're just going to pay me mailbox money as if I'm a bank for my property. And if you don't make your payments, I get to basically repossess the property and I now own it again. All right. This is really attractive for people who don't necessarily want to sell a property and get the money out. So people who have a lot of equity, and especially older people who are trying to retire, they might not need to sell their house. They just want mailbox money coming in. Remember, when you sell property, that triggers a taxable event, meaning you have to pay taxes on that to sell the property unless you 1031 and all this other stuff. But the older and older you get, you really don't want to be 1031 too much, right? Because you'll literally 1031 yourself out into multi-million deals and it becomes impossible. And then you have a big tax bill you'll have to pay if you sell. So what these people do is they say owner financing, meaning that over time, so I'm just going to get mailbox money because I don't need the proceeds of the property. And at a certain period of time, we will sell, or the person refinances and, you know, essentially buys that person out. But they don't want to cause a taxable event today. They want to push it down the road. And they do that through owner or seller financing is another term of that too. And it's great. It's a great way for buyers who, once again, don't have a lot of capital, don't have good credit, or don't fit in the traditional banking boxes to go in and get potential deals. I don't see too many of these in the short-term rental space. It doesn't mean they don't exist. It doesn't mean it's not possible. It doesn't mean they're not good deals. But once again, it's just a unique way that the seller can get 5%, 6% or whatever, even 4% on their money. We can say 6%. But something attractive to the buyer and then not have to sell, but also raise it much higher. So for example, I saw one the other day where the seller was like, "Look, I want 1.2 million. I was like, "Dude, your house is worth 900,000. He's like, "Yeah, but I'll seller finance it to you for 1.2 and you cash out in 5 years." Or meaning like you buy me out in 5 years. So they're going to get their equity, even more equity doing seller financing if they get a buyer to agree to that amount. So definitely a unique strategy and something to play. Now, other types of creative financing that I see, so it doesn't have to be super wild either. Okay. And it, like I said before, it doesn't necessarily have to not go through a bank. It can go through a bank and traditional loan, but essentially just working out additional terms with the seller outside of the traditional loan agreement. So for example, when I think of seller credits and concessions, that's actually a form of creative financing. Okay. When you get credits, maybe not concessions, because concessions are part of the loan. They wipe out your closing costs. It's use it or lose it. It can only go to closing costs. And there's certain limits for each loan, maybe up to 3% in the best case scenario. So I think of credits where, you know, we get these, you know, $1 million properties that you get $100,000 in credits or $80,000 in credits or whatever. And it's a separate addendum to the property, meaning as long as it appraises, the seller is going to give me $80,000, $100,000 at the closing table. So I give them a check for $1 million and they go, "Thank you." And then they write a check right back for $100,000 or whatever the seller credits we agreed to that I can use to pay for furnishings, for a designer, for contractors, for whatever I need them to do. Now, if you're thinking, well, hold on, is there some gray areas there? Yeah, sure. You can't take cash. Okay, typically a lot of states require you to put it towards an LLC, but if it's an LLC you own, then you get the money and it acts as cash. But typically what we do is we write it out to our designer, whoever's going to do the furnishing budget, and it goes straight to them at the closing table, and we now have less cash into the deal. This is the most attractive creative financing way for short-term rental operators because it allows you not to have as much money as you need into a deal. I've been talking about episode after episode on why you need to invest into your property, the 20% rule and what that is, meaning you need to spend a budget at least 20% of the purchase price for furnishings and amenities and design and all that good stuff. Okay, that's a lot of money. $500,000 home, that's $100,000, not just for the down payment, but for the furnishings and everything on a $500,000 home. Okay, so seller credits allows you to not have to have $100,000 in your own pocket just for that. You can take that money a seller gives you, maybe it's on a $500,000 home, maybe it's $20,000 or $30,000 or whatever it is, seller credits, and roll that into, now you only need $70,000 or $80,000 instead of $100,000 to furnish and amenitize and make it the top producing property. I want your properties to be in the top 1%. I want you to be a 1%er, okay? It's challenging being a 1%er. You got to have the nicest, the biggest, the baddest property. Not, okay, well, I say biggest. It's, you know, relative to your budget. But if you're going to be, if you can only afford a 2-bedroom in a market, then you better have the best 2-bedroom there is. You better have that moat that separates you from everybody else. And it's all going to come back to the money you put into the property. But remember, we don't want to overspend as well. That's something you need to be careful on when you're thinking about investing in these properties. And that's why seller credits makes it attractive from not having as much cash into the deal. Okay. But keep in mind, the property still has to appraise for that dollar amount. So if I said 500 with 20K in seller credits, well, it better still appraise for 500 because the bank is lending me money off 500. The seller is getting $500,000. If it doesn't appraise, then you got to take your credits back or figure something out with the seller. So so you can't just say, hey, you know, I know your property's worth $1 million. I'm going to give you a 1.2 and I take 200,000 to put into the property. It's got to appraise for the 1.2 if you're going to do that, or 500 or whatever the example is. So keep that in mind as you think about seller credits. But it is, in my opinion, one of the ways that you can create a finance deal for short-term rental operators. Okay. Last thing I want to talk about is not getting enamored by seller creative financing. Okay. Creative financing, especially subject to, banks don't love that, right? They don't like you circumventing their policies or, you know, their traditional means. And there is a bank involved because there is a mortgage, a current mortgage that you can be assigned. Okay. Now it is legal to change deed ownership. And that's essentially what you do without the mortgage or the mortgage company or the bank knowing that the deed has been changed. But if the bank does find it out, they will call the loan. And when they call the loan, that's basically saying, hey, we need the entire loan payment, like the entire amount that's owed. Okay. So you got to be, and that happens. I know people say, oh, that's really rare. It doesn't happen, blah, blah, blah. It's been happening. And I've seen it in the news too, where like Wells Fargo, Chase Bank, Key Bank, all these places, big banks are catching on to people doing this sub-2 thing and getting around them. And they're calling people's loans. Now, it's less than 1% of that time happens, but it can happen. So there is risk there when you're trying to do subject to or any type of, now seller financing or sorry, owner financing is out of the, we'll go in risk level. So subject to is risky, can be risky. Owner financing is a little less risky because the seller technically is still paying and the mortgage payment. And they're still technically on the deed. Remember, they're acting as the bank now. So if something were to happen, boom, the seller's still there and they still have technically actual ownership of the property, assuming that the buyer is no longer paying. So there's a little less risk there where the banks can't just call the loan on that. And then the third way that I mentioned the seller credits, it's not a part of the loan. It's a separate addendum to the initial offer contract when you submit. Therefore, it's the least riskiest because the banks aren't, they don't know about it. And it's something that's done at the closing table. Okay. Now, if you did tell the bank for some reason, or the bank did find out, they would say, hey, why are you doing this? And are you trying to, because they don't want you to use seller credits for your down payment. They want you to make sure that you can fund your own down payment, because using seller credits to them is considered risky from a standpoint, meaning, oh, this person doesn't have enough cash to buy this property. But it's not something that's illegal. It's not something they find out about, and it's extremely rare. And there's no risk of them calling a loan or anything like that with seller credits. And so that's not a concern. So the end of the day, using creative financing is a helpful and useful tool to getting some deals done, especially if you don't have a lot of capital. But don't get caught up in it simply because of the interest rate. Don't offer too high simply because you're trying to get less cash into the deal. Okay, we want our properties to appreciate. We want our properties to go for the long run and be, you know, obviously be successful. But we also want to sell at some point and make some money. Okay, and if you're saying, hey, yeah, I think your property, the seller's saying, no, my property's worth $1.4 million in 5 years. He doesn't know that. No one knows that. Okay. It's just a guess. And you know, they're going to be biased about it. So why overpay? Right. So just go down in purchase price. If you don't have the cash, you don't push it. Don't stress it. My opinion, be very cautious when doing creative financing. It can work, but just run your numbers and look at gross revenue before you get all caught up in the interest rates. All right. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Part two, we're bringing in a special guest who does a lot of creative financing deals all across. I'm not going to ruin it. So anyway, we're bringing in somebody to go over creative financing with us and talk about their experience doing it and the types of deals they've done to give you some live and real time examples. All right, Kenny Bedwell, and I hope you enjoyed this episode of Cashflow Positive, and I'll see you on the next one.